is a good one. You're gonna love this. This is like the ultimate offshore fantasy. So you're gonna love it. Anyway, welcome to the third episode of Offshore Banter. I'm your hostess, Kim Asher. And let's just get into it. Now look, I've recorded this about 10 times because I really want this to be like, you know, knock it into the next level. Do you remember Danny from Ramsgate, the guy from Cape Town, South Africa, who was the client rep on my survey vessel for, you know, about a month? And how Danny had this issue with a guy, right? And he just sorted it out. And so, look, this is a story that Danny told me at the end of his trip with us. So one evening, and it really was like the last couple of days before he flew back to Cape Town. And he and I went out for dinner and had a couple of drinks. And while we were there together, he told me this story. It's really good. So bear in mind, right, Danny is no nonsense. He is an offshore veteran, former military hydrographic surveyor, ROV pilot, really does a lot of days offshore and is absolutely rock solid. And you're only as good as your word in this industry. It's a small industry, and if you get a reputation for talking nonsense or playing games, you won't last that long. So what did Danny tell me? This was about 15 years ago that I was working with him, and he said that about 3 or 4 years before that, so we're talking about 2000-ish, a little bit more than that. It must have been a bit later than 2000, thinking about it. I'm losing years as I get older. This makeup holds the timeline a little bit, but not that much. Okay, so maybe it was about 2005 this story happened, thinking about it. I don't know why I keep thinking it's 2020. But, okay, whatever. So in about 2005, Danny had been working a lot that season, got home to Cape Town, was looking forward to having some time off to relax. He just got back, and a day or two later, still getting, you know, jet lag, still tired, not really landed back on Earth yet. And his agent phoned him, and Danny said to me that he had a good relationship with this agent who he trusted and had worked through for several years at that point. And his agent said, "Look, Danny, I know you've just got back to land, and I know you've been working a lot this season, but this job has just landed on my desk, and you're the first person I'm calling. And I've got to be honest, I'm going to keep calling people until somebody says yes, because I want to clinch this contract. I need to crew up this project really quickly. But you're my number one pick for the ROV pilot." Danny's like, "Okay, I'm really not in the market for work, but I'll hear what you have to say." The agent says, "Right, there's a lot of downsides, Danny. I'm going to be honest with you. But just wait until we get to the upside." "What are the downsides? Come on, just lay it out. I'm a veteran. I know what I'm doing. I've grown up." And the agent said, "Okay, right, the first thing is, if you accept this job, you have to be committed to it from the day you leave the house until the project is finished. And you won't leave the ship until the job is done. And then you'll come back home. And there's no getting off in the middle." And that's really strong in the contract I've been sent through by them. "Also, confidentiality is a massive deal on this project. So you're not going to get told any information about it before you actually get on the ship. So I can't even tell you the vessel name. Can't tell you where it is. All I can assure you is that it's legal. It's in a safe part of the oceans. There's no piracy, there's no war, there's no political unrest, there's no difficulty with like getting access to the vessel. It's a modern vessel, it's clean, apparently the food will be really good. The guys that have set up this project know, look after your sailors, right? They're not going to mess around, especially considering what they're asking people to go through to do this job. And Danny's like, well, that's pretty extreme. And the agent said, yeah, but also, no communications home. So no email, no phone calls, nothing. You can't even take electronic devices with you on this job. And Danny's like, wow, this is really serious. So how long is it going to last for? And the agent said, they've estimated 4 to 6 weeks. But we're coming into a bad time of year for weather. It's towards the end of the season, isn't it? So, you know what offshore jobs are like, Danny. Danny's like, yeah, okay, 3 months, isn't it? It's a 3-month gig. I have to commit to at least 3 months. It might even push a bit more. And the agent said, well, that's probably realistic. And Danny said, well, it's a lot to swallow, especially given that I've worked a lot already this year and I'm already tired. What's the upside? It must be the money, right? And the agent said, yeah. So, you know, what day rate do you want, Danny? And Danny said, well, what do you mean, what day rate do I want? And the agent said, well, look, your normal day rate is about $500 a day, US, as an ROV pilot. But to do this job with these restrictions, and given that you don't really want to work and you're tired already, in an ideal world, what's your day rate? And Danny just plucked a figure out of his head because he really didn't care if he got this job, especially considering all the restrictions on it. So he just said, $3,000 a day, US. And the agent said, yep, okay, agreed. And Danny's like, no, you are joking. Agent said, no, I'm deadly serious. And Danny says, well, in that case, it's $5,000 a day. And the agent said, no, $3,000 I can agree to, but we can't go beyond that. You know, your first serious offer is what I'm authorized to accept, and that's within the budget that I can afford to pay you for this. If you agree, door to door, $3,000 US a day for the entire duration of the project, start to finish, no quibbles. And they've already put a bond up for the full value of the whole crew that they need assembled. It's only about 12 people. Danny, hang on 1 second. Ugh. And Danny's like, $3,000 a day, when does it start? And he said, well, look, I'm towards the tail end of fitting out the whole crew. There's only one or two roles left. You're one of them. As soon as they've got the crew together, the ship is already waiting. They've got all of the project equipment waiting on standby. They literally just need the crew to fly out and join the vessel. And they want to do it within the next few days. And Danny's like, oh, God. All right, okay, I'll do it. And the agent's, are you sure? Because once you've committed, that's it, you know? Danny's like, no, you know me. If I say I'm going to do something, I'll do it. So then the paperwork arrived. Danny signed the contract, read through it, all this stuff about confidentiality and, you know, breach of contract and all of this kind of stuff. No electronic devices, no email, blah, 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 blah. But the rate was in there, $3,000 US a day, door to door. Signs it, sends it back to the agent. Agent looks through it. Great, Danny, welcome to the crew. As soon as we've got the departure date, I'll let you know, but stay ready, get your bag packed. It's going to be in the next couple of days. So a day or two passes, that's it, he's leaving. A car arrives outside his house, drives him to a heliport in Cape Town. He's flown by helicopter to this private airfield in northwestern South Africa. When he gets there, he's shown into this room, and a lot of the other crew have arrived, and everyone, there's just a few they're waiting for, stragglers that are also being delivered by helicopter that morning. And Danny recognised some of them. It's just typical offshore grunts, you know, like me and everyone else that works out there. And Danny recognised a few of them and said, well, do you know anything about this job? And they all looked at each other. No, we don't know anything, Danny, you know. bit weird, isn't it? Yeah. What's your day rate? I'm not meant to talk about it, but it's really good. Yeah, me too. I'm very happy with the money. All right, very good. Anyway, eventually, all of the crew that are flying out have arrived. And then this guy walks in and says, okay, I have to check you now for electronics and just reconfirm all of the conditions about no communications, that when you start the job, you finish it, unless there's an extreme emergency, all of that kind of stuff. And then reassured them it's safe, it's legal, it's in, you know, friendly waters, it's, there's no piracy, there's no this, that, and the other. He said, right, this is the jumping off point. If you're not going to go out and commit to this, you still don't know anything about it, this is when we can say goodbye and fly you home. Does anyone want to step away from this project at this point? And everyone's like, no, not for this money. No, I'm sticking here. So they get taken out to a helicopter after they've been checked. Danny sees these extended fuel tanks on this thing. And all 12 of them with their kit bags get on the chopper. And they're flown out to this ship at the furthest extent of the fuel tanks of this thing. And they're all a bit, God, we've been up in the air a long time. This thing can't have much fuel left. But eventually they land on the ship. They get their kit bags and they get guided into a conference room on the vessel. Shiny, modern, clean vessel. They're all quite happy with the ship they've landed on. And then they're briefed about what they're going to do. And then when they find out, their jaws drop and they look at each other like, wow, I'm so happy I've come on this job. And I'm going to keep a little bit of suspense about it. So forgive me for the drama, but I think the payoff's worth it. So anyway, right, this ship was floating in the sea just off the coast of the Skeleton Coast in Namibia, somewhere around that area. And in the water underneath them was a shipwreck. And they had developed this massive harpoon system specifically for this job. And this harpoon had a shaft about 3 or 4 meters long, very heavy metal, with these retractable blades. So then this harpoon, can you see that on the camera? Yeah, I just want you to see what's happening here, right? So the harpoon was suspended off the crane block and then lowered in the water just above the shipwreck with this hose, air hose, coming back up to the deck with this massive compressor building up a head of pressure, and then bang, fired this harpoon down through the water through the back deck of this shipwreck. And then when it punched through the steel plate, bang, like this, the arms opened out. And then they had this winch block pulling the harpoon back up through the deck. But of course, these arms had come out, these claws. And then it was just basically ripping off the top of the deck of the ship, of the shipwreck, like prying open a can of baked beans from inside with some massive, massive thing, massive hook. And they did that a few times over a few days, a week, or whatever, until they literally just decimated the top of this vessel, this back deck, and opened up access to the cargo hold in a way that would minimize the damage and the risk to the ROV, because of course the ROV umbilical, you've got the ROV flying around underwater, you've got the umbilical coming off that. Now if that got snarled and snagged on the metal debris, the jagged sharp edges of the hold, it would have just ripped through that like a knife cutting through a piece of string. So they wanted to avoid that, so they were very careful about doing this as much as they could. I think they probably did some grinding and cutting of some of the most, you know, dangerous remnants. So they had a bit of preparation time for a week or two. Then they inspect the whole area and they say, yeah, it's all clear. Now, this shipwreck, it was made from steel and it wasn't that corroded yet. But Danny reckoned it had been down there for a couple of decades, maybe 3 or 4 decades at the most. but also it was really quite submerged in sediment around the hull, so he didn't really see many indicators of it, and the only area that was exposed they could get access to was the back deck, which had now been destroyed. So he doesn't know much more about the actual shipwreck than that. But at that point, they prepared the worksite on the seabed, and now they're going to do their first exploratory dive into the vessel. Danny's sitting there on the joysticks. He flies down, and in his manipulator, he picks up a water jet, a subsea, and the RV is blowing all of this water. Sorry, it's blowing all of the sediment off all of the crates and everything else that's in the hold. And then he sees the first indication of what they're looking for. This glint of yellow metal. And the ship was filled with gold bullion. And so all of these wooden crates stacked up, pallets of them, in this area, in the hold. All, some of them broken open, some of them buried in sediment, some of them still intact. All of them filled with gold bullion. And their job was to, like, rip open the crates, remove all of the debris, and salvage brick by brick all of the gold bullion. So Danny's job was, with the ROV, flying to the hold, pick up each brick and put it into a subsea basket that was then lifted by crane back onto the ship that they were operating from. But when the basket was landed on the back deck, there were, like, these really serious security people, fully armed. Like, there was a lot of security people on the vessel, right? Fully armed. And they would carry brick by brick. They would put it into this secure container on the back deck that was always guarded with people with some serious machinery, serious weaponry, always, day and night. And every single brick was counted on the way up, of course, like, this studiously, 1, 2, 3. And all of these checks and balances put in place. And the project lasted just around 3 months, just as predicted. There was some bad weather, some of the hold was hard to access, there were issues with things, the umbilical on the RV, or the tether on the RV, did get damaged a few times, and they had to re-terminate it and stuff like that. So it was an adventure. And Danny says that after about 6 weeks of recovery operations, he lost count of how many, you know, bars of gold that he had recovered, but it was well over 1,000. And they still recovered for, you know, another almost month after that. So he reckons that it was somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 bars of gold recovered from the shipwreck on the Ivory Coast about 20 years ago. And, okay, so we're wrapping up the story now, because that's it. So he finished his job, flew home. The day he got home, he was paid in cash, $3,000 a day for 3 months. $300,000, basically, for 3 months of work. Good money by almost anybody's definition, isn't it? Certainly by mine. And, okay, so look, there are gaps in this story. And Danny didn't know some of the answers, and others he said, no, look, I really still am under confidentiality, but most of the answers he didn't know anyway. So he doesn't know the name of the wreck that they recovered from. He doesn't know when it sank. He doesn't know who owned the gold originally. He doesn't know if the people that recovered it, the end client that he was working for, that paid him so much money, he doesn't know if they were the original shipwreck owner, the insurance company, the owner of the gold originally, or treasure hunters. He has literally no idea. So basically, about $1 billion worth of gold treasure was salvaged off the seabed in the Skeleton Coast about 20 years ago, and almost nobody in the world knows anything about it until now. So I thought I'd share that with you, because I honestly, in all my years offshore, I haven't heard a whisper about this job anywhere else. And it's a fascinating one. So look, there's a lot of people in the offshore and the maritime industry that listen to this. If you know, or have a guess, the name of the shipwreck, or anything about where that gold came from, which gold it might have been, or where it went, put it down in the comments or get in touch, because I'd love to know. I'd love to fill in the gaps. So anyway, that was Danny. That was another story from Danny. And I think that's going to be the last episode that's based around my time in Ramsgate. We might come back to it, because there's other stories from Ramsgate. Like, I think, adventures in the Belgian bar and stuff like that. But anyway, I hope you had a really good time listening to this one. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I hope, as I think you might have done. I certainly have had fun telling it to you, because it's been stuck in the back of my head for, you know, a long time. And it's good to share these stories, these legends of the sea. So anyway, catch you next time. This was Offshore Banter with Kim Asher. And thanks for listening to me. I know how valuable people's time is. I know how many competing sources of social media there are for us to indulge in. So the fact you spent a bit of time listening to my podcast, my talk, it means a lot to me. I value it. And don't think I don't, because I really do. So anyway, time to wrap up. If you are on watch, if you're offshore, if you're at sea and away from home, have a good watch. Stay safe. Be a good shipmate and look after each other. Don't let anyone feel excluded. We're all a big family in this industry. Don't forget that. Be the best person you can be and help everyone else be the best they can be. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Lots of love to everyone. Bye.